All right, so get ready because on this deep dive, we are going on a whirlwind trip around the world.
Are we?
We're diving deep into these snippets from a fascinating travelogue, originally written in German. And let me tell you, this traveler has some stories.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, what's captivating about this one is we're not just, retracing steps on a map. We're retracing steps of a personal journey. This isn't just like been there, done that. You know, it's about those universal anxieties, the cultural clashes that make you see the world differently, and that constant dance between expectation and reality.
It's like we're unpacking someone's life one suitcase at a time. And speaking of suitcases, our journey begins in São Paulo, Brazil. And right off the bat, the traveler mentions feeling anxious about leaving his comfort zone, even though he's excited about the trip. That familiar push and pull.
Absolutely. It's that universal tension between craving comfort and yearning for growth. It's like he's stepping onto a diving board, that moment of like, should I jump? That everyone can relate to.
And jump he does because he ends up encountering unprepared fellow travelers in Brazil who are ill-equipped for the Amazon, and the traveler finds himself in a moral dilemma. Does he help them out and risk his own well-being or prioritize himself?
It's a classic travel conundrum, amplified by cultural expectations, generosity versus self-reliance. It's a fascinating tug of war. And what's considered the right thing to do can vary so drastically depending on where you are in the world.
Then he goes on this incredible jeep ride through the Amazon with a guide, Nico, who seems to have mastered the art of silence. Talk about a communication barrier.
That is a prime example of how cultural norms shape communication styles. What's perceived as friendly in one culture can be seen as overbearing in another. It highlights the importance of being adaptable and really reading between the lines while traveling, especially when verbal communication is limited.
From the silence of the Amazon, we shift to the bustling streets of Buenos Aires, where the traveler experiences every traveler's worst nightmare.
Oh, no.
His backpack is stolen.
I know.
And he vividly describes this feeling of being knocked down, not physically, but emotionally, by the loss of his passport, his glasses, his money, even a beloved stuffed animal named Fred.
This incident really underscores the vulnerability that we experience when traveling, especially when stripped of our familiar support systems. But it also reveals the incredible resilience of the human spirit. He goes through this emotional free fall, then slowly pieces himself back together, aided by the kindness of strangers.
This part really touched me. He talks about this incredible taxi driver in Buenos Aires who went above and beyond to help him navigate this bureaucratic maze after the theft, even refusing full payment because he was so angered by what had happened.
It's the thing about travel, even when you're at your most vulnerable, the most genuine human connections can emerge. It's a beautiful reminder that even in a city of millions, acts of compassion can make you feel seen and supported.
Leaving the city behind, he describes this almost spiritual experience while flying into El Calafate, the gateway to Patagonia. Picture this endless brown landscapes, rugged and vast, with the Andes Mountains rising in the distance like something out of a dream.
This stark contrast from the urban chaos of Buenos Aires to the raw wilderness of Patagonia, it's like he's physically transitioning into a different world, one that demands a different pace, a different kind of awareness.
And what a world it is because he encounters a glacier for the first time, the Perito Moreno. And the way he describes the ice reflecting the light, the cracking sound echoing through the valley, it's like he's rediscovering a sense of wonder that adulthood often chips away at.
Think about it. He even compares this experience to his childhood fascination with a solar eclipse. Both the glacier and the eclipse represent these rare, awe-inspiring events that force us to reconnect with a sense of wonder that we often lose sight of as we get older.
It's amazing how travel can reawaken that childlike curiosity, that ability to be awestruck by the world around us. But even surrounded by this breathtaking scenery, he's still grappling with his anxieties. He mentions this sense of unease while staying in El Chalten, almost as if the silence and isolation amplify his inner turmoil.
Isolation can be a double-edged sword, can't it? It allows for introspection, but it can also magnify those anxieties that might otherwise stay dormant. And so he's physically in a place of incredible beauty, but mentally he's still navigating his own internal landscape.
He tries to combat this unease by diving back into his travel plans, even revisiting this idea of the Atacama Desert, which he'd initially dismissed. It's like he's using the promise of future adventures to outrun his current anxieties.
it's a fascinating coping mechanism. The allure of the what's next becoming a shield against the what is.
Right.
It speaks to the human tendency to seek solace in the future and the promise of something different, something better. And speaking of what's next, our traveler is about to face a whole new set of challenges as he ventures into the Andes Mountains. The Andes Mountains, they're notorious for their high altitude, and that can really throw you for a loop, both physically and mentally.
True.
And our traveler, well, let's just say he learns that the hard way.
Yeah, he starts experiencing altitude sickness, which really throws a wrench in his plans for this, you know, easygoing trek that his guide had promised.
Right.
And you can practically feel this doubt creeping in, you know, this questioning of his own resilience.
Yeah, it's a reminder that no matter how much we plan travel, throws those curveballs.
It does.
And the Andes, in this case, become a crash course in managing expectations and adapting on the fly. Plus, he's traveling with a group.
Right.
So it adds like another layer of complexity to the whole thing.
Right. He's with this group that includes a Dutch brain surgeon who, ironically, also succumbs to altitude sickness.
Oh, wow.
But it's so interesting how he contrasts their reactions.
Okay.
Because he kind of downplays his own discomfort, but the surgeon is practically debilitated despite having climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in the past.
Wow.
So it's just this fascinating look at how subjective experiences can be, even when you're facing this physical challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how altitude sickness does not discriminate.
No.
It does not. It can impact anyone, regardless of past experience or physical fitness.
So true.
Talk about humbling, right?
Yeah.
So from the heights of the Andes, we land in a place that's almost otherworldly, the Uyuni Salt Flats in Bolivia. Have you ever seen pictures?
I have, yeah.
It's like this sea of white stretching as far as the eye can see.
It's incredible.
He even mentions having fun with perspective.
Yeah.
You know, taking those classic photos where you look like a tiny speck against this vastness.
Oh, yeah.
But even in this magical setting,
yeah,
his anxieties find a way to creep back in.
Oh, no.
He mentions struggling to play cards at that high altitude.
Wow.
Even simple calculations becoming difficult. And it's these oddly specific details that really reveal how deeply the environment is impacting him.
It speaks volumes about the interconnectedness of our physical and mental states.
Yeah.
You know, altitude affects not just our bodies,
right,
but our cognitive functions, our ability to think clearly, to process information.
Right.
It's a reminder that we're not just minds navigating the world,
yeah,
but embodied beings subject to the whims of our physical environments.
And just when you think he's spiraling back into anxiety, we get this incredible contrast.
What's that?
He finds himself on stage performing with a band in Indonesia.
Wow.
This is a complete 180 from his usual, you know, shy demeanor.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to performing. And he even talks about feeling this sense of kinship with the musicians, despite the language barrier.
It's like travel has unlocked something within him.
Yeah.
This spontaneous act of creation.
Totally.
Of connecting through music. It speaks to the transformative power of stepping outside of our comfort zones.
Yeah.
You know, travel can be that stage where we try on different versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
Discover hidden talents, connect with others in ways we never thought possible.
It's a beautiful reminder that music like travel can be this universal language.
It really can.
Then he's off to Brunei, which he paints as this stark contrast to the anything goes vibe of neighboring Malaysia.
Interesting.
You know, strict social norms, religious customs. It's a completely different cultural landscape.
Brunei offers a glimpse into a society with different values, different priorities.
Right.
It's a reminder that what's considered acceptable behavior, even the pace of life, can change drastically from one country to the next.
And this cultural difference becomes even more apparent when he encounters this aggressive German expat in Brunei.
Oh, really?
They get into this heated debate.
Oh, wow.
And it's so clear that their personal experiences, their deeply held beliefs, are shaping their entire worldview.
Yeah, this clash of perspectives underscores the challenges of cross-cultural communication, especially when strong opinions are involved.
For sure.
It highlights the importance of empathy and understanding, even when encountering viewpoints that are completely different from our own.
Right.
Travel often forces us to confront these differences, to acknowledge the limitations of our own perspectives, and to see the world through a more nuanced lens.
Then comes the culture shock of all culture shocks.
What's that?
China.
Oh, boy.
He arrives in Shanghai, and it's sensory overload.
I can only imagine.
The crowds, the language, the sheer scale of the city he describes feeling like an alien, completely out of his element.
That feeling of being an outsider, of not belonging.
Yeah.
It's such a common experience for travelers, especially when encountering a culture as different from their own as China.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's in those moments of discomfort, of feeling like we don't belong,
Yeah.
that we often grow the most.
And sometimes those moments of feeling lost lead to the most incredible connections.
Oh, wow.
Because he talks about this serendipitous encounter with this Chinese woman while he's struggling to like fix his SIM card.
Oh, wow.
And they end up spending the evening together, exploring the city, and even attending the Formula One race in Shanghai. Yeah.
From a broken SIM card to the Formula One race?
I know, it's crazy,
How's
right?
that amazing?
This chance encounter born out of a moment of frustration blossoms into this unexpected connection.
It's true, but they say sometimes the universe pushes you in a direction.
It
I'm
does.
messing with you a little
It
bit.
really does.
That's wild.
Hold on. Hold on. He snuck onto the Formula One track.
No way.
Yes.
He snuck onto the track.
This is a guy who struggles to order food in a foreign language, and he is sneaking onto the Formula One track.
That's amazing.
It seems like this unexpected boldness might be a sign of real progress.
It's like he's shedding layers of inhibition,
Totally.
pushing past those self-imposed limitations.
Yeah.
The excitement of the race, the shared experience, it creates a space where he can just be more present, more authentically himself.
But after the excitement of the race, those familiar anxieties, they resurface.
Oh no.
He talks about watching the podium ceremony and wishing he could be as bold in his personal life as he was when he like snuck onto the track.
It's a poignant observation,
It is.
isn't it? He's recognizing that gap between his actions and his desires, that fear of rejection holding him back in other areas of his life.
From the high-speed world of Formula One, he embarks on a completely different journey,
Okay.
a train ride through the Himalayas to Tibet.
Wow, what a contrast.
I know, it's incredible, right?
Completely different pace of life.
This journey is more than just a change of scenery, though.
All right.
It's a symbolic transition.
Okay.
He's leaving behind that modern, fast-paced world
Yeah.
and entering this realm of ancient traditions, breathtaking landscapes, and a slower, more contemplative way of life.
I love that.
He talks about these challenges of navigating language barriers, the cultural differences that surprise and intrigue him,
Yeah.
but also the moments of human connection that transcend these differences.
And that's the beauty of travel. It throws you into situations where you're forced to rely on gestures, on intuition,
Yeah.
and that shared human experience to bridge the gap between cultures and languages.
He arrives in Lhasa, the capital of Tibet,
Okay.
and he's just overwhelmed by this spiritual atmosphere, the
Wow.
ancient traditions and this palpable history of the
You
city.
can feel it.
He describes visiting temples, witnessing religious ceremonies, and just feeling this sense of awe at the power of faith and devotion.
Something he hasn't really encountered before.
Yeah, it's really
That's
interesting.
very different for him.
Lhasa becomes this space of deep reflection for him.
Yeah.
It's a stark contrast to that secular modern world that he's experienced in cities like Shanghai.
Right.
And it reminds him of this vast spectrum of human beliefs and the enduring power of faith.
It's a good reminder for all of us.
And he doesn't shy away from the more complex aspects of Tibet either,
Okay.
because he reflects on the political
Right.
situation, the Chinese government's control over the region, and the Tibetan people's struggle to preserve their cultural identity.
Yeah, this acknowledgement is crucial.
Yeah.
He's not just observing the surface-level beauty,
Right.
but engaging with the historical and political realities that shape the lives of the people he's encountering.
He even has this really thought-provoking conversation with this Chinese student who defends China's actions in Tibet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the student talks about the economic development, the improvements in infrastructure, essentially arguing that Tibet is better off under Chinese rule.
This clash of ideologies, this challenge to
Yeah.
his preconceived notions, that's where the real learning happens. It forces him to engage with multiple perspectives,
Right.
reminding him that there are always different sides to every story.
And that's the thing about travel is that it's so easy to stay in your bubble,
So easy.
especially now.
Oh, yeah.
But to put yourself out there in a situation where you have to listen to an opinion that is different than yours, it's
Absolutely.
eye-opening.
Very eye-opening.
So he leaves Lhasa with a head full of questions and a heart full of awe.
Yeah.
Tibet, it seems, has cracked open his understanding of the world a little wider.
I love that.
And speaking of challenging preconceived notions, the next stop on his journey is the most mysterious and controversial of all,
What's that?
North Korea. North Korea, talk about a destination loaded with preconception.
Yeah.
It's like stepping into a time capsule cut off from the rest of the world. But what's so fascinating is our traveler seems drawn to this very mystery.
Yeah.
This desire to like see beyond the headlines and form his own conclusions.
It's a testament to his intellectual curiosity, this willingness to engage with a place that a lot of people would just avoid.
Right.
North Korea for him becomes like the ultimate test of his open-mindedness, a challenge to confront his own biases and see the world through a different lens.
And he talks about the strict regulations, yeah, the constant surveillance, you know, just this feeling of being an actor in a carefully staged performance.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder, is he seeing the real North Korea, or is it just this meticulously curated facade?
It's the paradox of traveling to such a controlled environment.
Yeah.
You know, he's granted access, but at what cost?
Yeah.
Every interaction, every observation is filtered through this lens of propaganda and control.
He describes Pyongyang, the capital, as surprisingly clean and orderly.
Okay.
He's even taken aback by this lack of overt military presence and this normalcy of everyday life.
Interesting.
You know, he sees kids playing families going about their day, a far cry from that bleak, militarized image that we often see in the media.
Right. It's like that's all we're really used to seeing.
Yeah.
It's a powerful reminder of the limitations of media representation.
Yeah.
You know, our understanding of places like North Korea is often shaped by, you know, carefully selected images and narratives
for sure
that don't always reflect the complexities of lived experience.
It's like seeing a different side of a coin that's always presented as one-dimensional.
Totally.
But even still, he doesn't shy away from those more unsettling aspects.
Yeah.
He talks about these elaborate monuments dedicated to the Kim dynasty.
Of course.
This cult of personality that permeates every aspect of society.
These observations reveal the paradoxical nature of North Korea.
Yeah.
It's this place where totalitarian control coexists with a yearning for normalcy.
Right.
Where propaganda is mixed with genuine displays of emotion.
He even manages to negotiate a change in his very tightly controlled itinerary.
What?
You know.
He actually spoke up.
He did. He expressed this desire to witness the May Day celebrations in Pyongyang.
Wow.
Even though his guides are trying to steer him towards a more like official excursion.
So he's like, I want to see how the people celebrate.
Yes, exactly.
I love that.
And his guides are like, I don't know about that. And he's like, no, I really want to do this.
Wow. That's a small act of defiance, but it's still significant.
Yeah.
He's rejecting that passive role of the tourist, expressing this genuine curiosity about everyday life, even if it's just a glimpse.
And what does he find?
No.
Joy.
Mm-hmm.
He describes these May Day celebrations as this relaxed, almost festive atmosphere with families picnicking, children playing.
How sweet.
This sense of community that transcends the political context.
It's a good reminder that even in like the most restrictive societies, the human spirit finds ways to like, you know, express joy, to connect, to find those moments of normalcy amidst the extraordinary.
But of course, no trip to North Korea is complete without a dose of bureaucratic chaos.
Oh, no. What happened?
Right as he's departing from North Korea, he recounts this hair-raising experience at the airport.
Oh, no.
Due to a visa mix-up, he's initially denied entry into China despite having a valid transit visa.
Oh, no. That's awful.
It's like this stark reminder of the precariousness of travel in such a tightly controlled environment.
Absolutely.
One moment you're enjoying a picnic on May Day, the next moment you're caught in this bureaucratic nightmare.
Totally, and facing the very real possibility of being sent back.
Exactly, and all of the uncertainty that comes with that.
Oh, gosh.
But he is ultimately allowed to board his flight, but not without enduring this whirlwind of frantic negotiations, last-minute arrangements, a healthy dose of anxiety.
Well, of course.
But he makes it.
He made it.
He arrives in the Philippines exhausted, probably emotionally jet-lagged.
Oh, yeah.
But with this newfound appreciation for the complexities of navigating such a controlled environment,
yeah.
And wouldn't you know it?
What?
Those anxieties, those familiar companions, they're waiting for him?
Oh, no, they follow you everywhere.
They really do.
It's almost like they were lying in wait, you know?
Yeah.
Those ingrained patterns of thought, of behavior, ready to resurface the moment he steps back into a world that feels more familiar. And it comes out in this really interesting way. He gets into this heated argument with a taxi driver.
I didn't know.
Over what he perceives as an attempt to overcharge him.
Okay.
And he uses these words like aggressive and cunning to describe the driver. And it's like he's projecting his own feelings of distrust onto the situation.
It's a classic example of how our internal landscape just colors our perception of the external world.
You're right.
You know, he's still grappling with those ingrained beliefs about the world being this hostile place, even after experiencing like, you know, the genuine warmth and kindness of strangers throughout his travels.
Right, but even in his struggles, you see progress.
Okay.
He's more self-aware. He's more willing to acknowledge his own role in these situations.
Then that's key, self-awareness.
Yeah.
It's the foundation upon which lasting change can be built.
It's true.
He's starting to recognize those patterns, those triggers that kind of send him spiraling.
He then dives headfirst into experiencing the Philippines.
Okay.
But this time with a focus on natural wonders. He's a little disappointed by a lack of whale shark sightings, but then has this incredible encounter with thresher sharks while diving.
Wow.
So it's like this beautiful metaphor for his journey as a whole.
How so?
The whale sharks representing those grand expectations, those things that we pin our hopes on,
yeah,
they don't always materialize.
That's true.
But sometimes when we least expect it, we stumble upon something equally breathtaking.
Right.
Something that shifts our perspective in profound ways.
I love that.
He also recounts this, like, really harrowing experience during a diving trip when a storm suddenly erupts.
Oh, no.
He's tossed around by the waves. His visibility is reduced to zero.
Scary.
And yet, amidst the chaos, he maintains this remarkable sense of calm.
Wow.
He describes this experience with this detached precision, focusing on the practical steps he took to ensure his safety.
It's like all the lessons he's learned throughout his travels, the importance of staying present, trusting his instincts, letting go of control, have coalesced into this moment of remarkable composure. You know, he's facing a life or death situation, and yet there's this sense of peace, of acceptance that wasn't there before.
It's in this near-death experience that you see how far he's come.
How so?
He's no longer that anxious traveler that we met in Sao Paulo.
He's a changed man.
He's a changed man. He has weathered storms, both literal and metaphorical, and he has emerged stronger, more resilient, more at peace with himself and the world around him.
His journey reminds us that the greatest discoveries are often made not on a map, but within ourselves.
It's so true.
You know, it's about embracing the unknown, confronting our fears, and ultimately coming to a deeper understanding of what it means to be human.
This deep dive into one man's travelogue has taken us across continents, cultures, and emotional landscapes.
Yes.
And it's just this powerful reminder that travel is more than just ticking off destinations on a list.
It's about the in-between.
It is. It's about the transformation that happens along the way. It's about those unexpected encounters that shape us, the moments of self-discovery that stay with us long after we've returned home.
So well said.
So as you continue your own explorations, whether they are across the globe or within the depths of your own heart, remember to embrace the unexpected, to challenge your assumptions, and to savor those moments of connection that make the journey so worthwhile.